Okay. Good. So we had been up to what's Mishnah Dalet in the Mishnayot, right? But it's still part of the first unit in the Yerushalmi, which is part of its comparison between or connection between doing business with Peir Shviat and other Isurim, which we again was the problem we set out last time. The Mishnah says that Lakach Bechor L'Mishtevino Ola Regel, if you had bought a Bechor, which is a Balmum, right, and therefore you're allowed to eat it, for a party for your son, or for the holiday, Velot Sarachlo, and then in the end you didn't eat it, Mutter Lo L'machro, you're allowed to sell it on, because, presumably, right, what is the assumption here? Right, why is it that if you bought it for a party, now you could sell it on, which normally you're not allowed to do? Because it wasn't your intention to sell it when you bought it. Very good. Now, this parallel to Shviat is going to be important, right? Because what does that imply about the Isur Sechara when it comes to Bechor?
If you're allowed to sell it, right? If you were planning
well, give me the opposite.
You can't be a mailman.
Right, meaning... Right, the implication is that selling it as a middleman, right, as a whatever you want to call it, a retailer who buys it wholesale, is worse, and therefore, as Mordechai said, when you're not, right, you're even allowed to do that if that wasn't your plan, right? Tzadei chaya ofot v'dagim shenitmanu lahem minim tmeim. And then the Mishnah tells you that if you are a fisherman or a hunter, and you happen to get not kosher food, not kosher fish in your net, not kosher animals, whatever the case may be. So mutar lamochon, you're allowed to sell it. Now, how is that connected to the previous line?
Well, you see, you have intention to get them.
What?
You have intention to get
them. Right. So you can sort of look at it and you're like, well, I mean, I sort of see that, like you didn't have intention. So the intention wasn't get non-kosher fish. The problem is that the parallel at first glance isn't perfect, because in the first case it's I'm allowed to eat it, I can't I can't buy it to sell it, right, but I can buy it to eat. And then if I right, the parallel is that in both cases the problematic thing was not the intentional, it was an accidental afterthought, which is fine, but the parallel is still weird, because in one of them, I'm allowed to buy to eat, I'm not allowed to buy to sell. Here, I'm allowed to hunt to sell kosher, but if, you know, there's leftover, right? Very unclear.
The buy to eat and buy to sell, I don't think is like so problematic. If you're buying it to eat it, it's just an extension of what the action of eating is.
Well, that's what we got to figure out, right? Meaning, you're buying it to eating, and that we allow, but buying to sell, we don't, unless you bought it to eat and now it's leftover. That's okay. And you can see why that's somehow comparable, even though it's not quite identical, to being a, right? I'm trying to catch salmon or the common case, a very common case, which is actually very problematic halachically, is that you are a tuna fisherman and you accidentally catch
dolphin.
Right, this is a big problem in kashrus, right? Right, because the dolphin actually gets mixed up into the food itself. But this is a straight up kashrus problem. Agreed. Rehuda Omer Af Mishem Nitmane Lo Lifi Darko. Even if you happen to have a not kosher animal, Lokeach Umocher Bavachle Dimanato Lekach Becham Oster. Then Rehuda goes farther and he says, if you happen to get a non kosher animal, right, not just with the kosher animal, but you happen to acquire a non kosher animal, you're allowed to sell it. And the Chum say you can't do that, right? So Rehuda, now we got to figure out what their machloket is and how this weighs in. And I will point out that this is before we get into the lumdus of it, just so you understand where this goes, but there is a very, very, very practical implication of this that happens all the time. And that is, what? No, I'm the kosher one. There's a very, very, very common. Oh God, you guys overthink things. Shechita houses, right? After you shecht an animal, what do you need to do? You need to check and make sure that it's kosher. It doesn't have a trefa. It's not a trefa, right? What happens? It turns out it's a trefa. You sell it to a non-Jew, right? Like that's the classic case.
fun.
Right, but this is the classic case. I didn't mean to sell non-kosher food. I have all these. I'm checking them. Some of them are going to be trefo, but that's the price of doing business, and that's fine, right? Right, that seems to be the paradigmatic case, right? That, and this is what it's based on. What? Right, right, right. Meaning, but if I buy a bunch of animals, you're never going to know all of them in advance. That's why I have to do bidiko, right?
Part of the reason is, like, disposal, right? Because, like, if you're doing something to have something else, right? Like, you're doing something to get kosher food, and then there's, like, some small non-kosher byproduct, you have to dispose of it either way. So you dispose of it through skora, but the skora isn't the main function of having...
Well, you said two different things there, right? I mean, one is that it's not the main function, right? You said two things. One is, it's not the main function, and maybe that's okay. The other is... I have to get rid of it in some way, right? So once I'm getting rid of it, I have to do something with it. So then I'm allowed to discover. Right. What? Meaning bidyevet, again, bidyevet in the literal meaning. Not, like, not ideal, but bidyevet in its only case, it's only okay post facto, right. Not ab initio. That's correct. Right. But those are two different things. What's the nafkamina?
Well, that was predecided that you would sell it.
Right, right. Meaning what happens in a case where it's not ideal, it's not whatever, but... I didn't have to bring it into my, right?
What if there's one that you're, like, pretty sure that...
Or whatever, right? You can come up with cases where that's not going to be okay, right? But this is going to be, right? But this is a very important thing. It happens to be, by the way, if you know anything about the history of kashrus in America, I don't know much you know about the history of kashrus in America.
I know kashrus, but I don't know the history of it that much.
Okay, right, so...
My grandfather was the first one in the black kosher.
There you go. So the history of kashrus in America is very interesting. But so at some point I went on like a binge reading of everything I get on. I do that on the history of kashrus. So I read I read three books on the topic. One is written from the vantage point of an economics, which is by Timothy Litton, which is very good, called Kosher. What?
Of course, I would like that economics.
Oh, that was great. And then I read two more: one by Sue Fishkoff and one by Kosher Nation and Kosher USA. And one of the things that's interesting there is it turns out that while for most products, the story of the 20th century into the 21st is one of increasing kashrus, right? Or kashrus supervision. What?
Hebrew national.
But when it comes to meat, actually, it's actually decreasing. So because of this reality, right, that you need to check a lot of kosher animals to make sure that you get ones which are kosher because it might be treif and the like. It turns out that at the peak, according to one of these books, 25% of all animals shechted in America were shechted by kosher slaughterhouses, including the ones that weren't kosher. But because of the trefa issues, right, a lot of what it was wasn't kosher, right? So this is actually a big deal. This is a very, 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 very big deal. Okay. So, but we need to figure out what the connection is here between these and what it teaches us about Shemitah, because right off the bat, right, there is a certain parallel, obviously, but what it's going to tell us about Schora and Peretrit is going to be our job. Okay, so that is the Mishnah. So now, I will leave it up to you. Would you like to try to understand the Mishnah before we ever looked at the Yerushalmi, understand them before I show the Mishnah, or should we have all the evidence in front of us from Chazal, and then tackle the Mishnah and the Yerushalmi together? What do you want to do? Let's read the Yerushalmi. Let's outline even more problems we have with the sugya, and then once we have it all together, we will try to actually pin down what is going on. Okay, fine. So you've turned to Nun Hayam and Bet. Right? Right? So turn right before the Schora, actually. Just let's read three lines of Yerushalmi before that. Okay? So remember, one of the oddities we noted in the Mishnah is that we seem to be talking about Schora, but Schora is an afterthought. In Michael Behema, Michael Ahema, Tzava. By the way, you can't die for other people. So let's start with that line. So Hatzoveya, Tzava Tzoveya, Latzmo, Well Yitzvah La'acherim B'schar. Right? You're allowed to die for yourself, but not for others. Right? That was how we got into this whole topic. Yes? So the Yerushalmi then says, Ma'u Litzboa B'tovat Hanaya. And so this is, of course, shocking, where, you know, remember that this is how we get into Schora, and the first question the Gemara has is like, You gotta love it sometimes when Kumari does this, right? Instead of tackling the topic head on, we're like, oh, an exception to an exception to an exception to an exception. What do you think about that, right? So it says, aha, you told me that because of Schora, you can die for yourself and not for others. But what if I'm not dying for others with Perichviet, but I'm dying, I am, but I'm not doing it for money. I'm doing it for Tovat Hana'ah. What's Tovat Hana'ah? Exactly, right? But not an exclusive favor. It's not I'm trading a favor. That would be business. It's no. It's I will agree to dye Kobe's sweatshirt. What color would you like it to be instead of gray? Gray. He would like it to remain gray. I will dye the stains out so it's all gray, okay? Right? Sorry. As I see, like, a stain on your head right here. Right, so I will dye it gray, right? But I don't expect anything explicitly. But in the back of my head, I'm like, but if I do a favor for Kobe...
He owes me one.
Wait, but Rabbi, don't we say by ribbis that counts? Don't we say that by ribbis even that counts?
Ribbis is unique. Tovat Hana'ah means different things in different contexts. Whoa. Tovat Hana'ah means different things. So the Gemara says, well, what about that? Now, of course, right, so you understand, it's like, now we're getting into the weeds of, like, the Tzaba case. And the Gemara answers. Now I will point out that there is a machloket whether Tovat Hana'ah is what I just said, right? Or Tovat Hana'ah means that you pay a little bit, like a symbolic amount, right? No, like a symbolic amount. Like, okay, I mean, you should pay me $10, but I'll take a buck, right?
Pay me for the labor.
If I pay you a penny and you give me your daughter,
okay.
What's the point of that?
Okay, what is that? We just want to highlight the problems as we're going through. Fine. So then the Yerushalmi attempts to answer min madatani ha shal shushit v'chal bitzin. Hatagar osel atzmo hadamra sha'asur litzbo v'tovat hanaya. Right? It sounds like it is asur, because it sounds like you, for you, and only for you. Okay? So, whatever it means, it seems to mean that the definition of business is more expansive than we would have otherwise thought. Right? Okay? What it means, we'll have to come back to. But so far, what? But let's focus on the, right? I'm going to come back to all this, but let's get all the facts on the table. So then the Yerushalmi says, She'ein osen schara, right? You don't do business with Bechor, Truma, Nevela, Trefa, Shkatzim, Ramasim. K'tiv, what's the source for that? T'me'im heima lochem. They are impure to you. Ma talmud lomar t'me'im lochem. What does that mean? Right? What does that come to add that? It says it twice. It says it once in Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Chav Chet, and a second time in Pasuk Lamed Hey. Ella Echad Iser Achila VeEchad Iser Hana'ah. Okay, someone want to parse those words? And therefore, so the Gemara says, right? Therefore, what do we learn?
Hana'ah and eating.
Oh, very good. Hana'ah and eating. Yeah, but not the other way around.
So why not say Hana'ah?
No. Because,
why don't you say Hana'ah is a problem?
No, because you always need to double it, because otherwise you would always go for the more minimal. Right? You always need a double to be expensive.
Right, yeah.
If you only had one, that's clear. There's a bigger problem here. That doesn't bother me. What bothers me?
How do you know?
Right. So what is it? And if you pause at this point and I ask you, right, is there such a thing as an Isser Schora? What's the answer? No. What is there? Is there Hana'ah? There's Isser Hana'ah. And one type of Hana'ah is Schora.
No. Our Schora is
Oh, right. I said, if I just read those words, right? I would. Right? Now, what's the problem? What's the problem? Someone tell me what the problem is. So that's not a problem in general. You can say schor is just a derivative of hana. That's fine, right? You could say that schor is... Oh, very good. That doesn't work in our case. Thank you very much, right? That works if you forgot where we are in Shas. Meaning, if I told you that basar b'chalav is asur b'achila, right? And asur b'hana. And because it's asur b'hana, you can't do business with it as a derivative of this or hana, and therefore you can't own a franchise of McDonald's.
But Perishviz is not asur hana.
Right? So that makes sense if these few lines existed in Chulin. But remember, the Gemara here is comparing the Isser of Schor of Shviit to Bichor, Truma, Shkatzim, Ramasim. Where, right? Right? Remember we said, why is it, why are they linked, right? Why does the Mishnah mention the Isser Schora of Peter Shviit along with all these other things? And we said, is it because there's some sort of conceptual parallel or not? You read this line and you're like, well, if there's a conceptual parallel, then certain categories have broken down really badly because someone, nothing fancy, someone proved to me that the Isser Schora by Shmita either isn't or is highly unlikely to be in a derivative of Isser Hana. And if it is, it is the most attenuated Isser Hana I've ever heard. Because you are allowed to slash
have to
get Hana from it, even outside of Achila, like, give me two examples that will prove that. And I don't want you to prove, to quote anything that's not in the Mishnah. What's so funny? Oh, okay. Yeah.
That Hana is.
Give me two examples of Hana being mutter. Well, very good. The previous words in the Mishnah, which is dying things, you know, the literally the last thing we said about it. And what's the other one? Come on, give me another Mishnah. Chet bet. Hashvit nitna lachila. Vishtia. Sicha. And then? Hadla. Right. Sicha is mutter. And then the next one? Hadlaka. Which means that If I knew nothing but Mishnayot, I would look at this and say, wait, you are telling me that the Isser Schora is being conceptualized as a derivative of Isser Hana'a, and for some reason that type of Isser Schora is compared to Shviit, which is Mutter B'Hana'a. I see. So what exactly, in what way, are these at all linked, right? This is a very big problem. Right?
They're not linked, and this is only going on the case of tame animals.
What?
You say they're not linked.
So, of course, the answer could be they're not linked. They're not linked. Haraya, they're not linked. Right? And then you have to ask the question. Let's say they're not linked at all. Thank you, Mordechai. That's the question is. Yes, but if they are fundamentally different, if the second you say that the Isser Schora by not kosher animals is a derivative or some version of an attenuated Isser Hana'a, right? This gets really problematic because it's compared to Schora. Now, there are other problems. So, for example, right? Let me give you another problem. There's a slight other problem here, which is simple understanding of halacha. Is there an Isser Hana'a on non-kosher food?
No, yeah. It's only
meat. No, there isn't, right? Basar b'chalav, yes, right? Basar b'chalav, yes, right? But even basar b'chalav, is there really an Isser Hana'a? No, there's an Isser Hana, which is Hana derech achila, right? So you're not allowed to sell or feed basar b'chalav to an animal. But are you allowed to use a cheeseburger as a doorstop?
Yeah,
pashtos, you are allowed to. So there's two problems here. First of all is, what is the comparison to Shemitah? Second of all is, this doesn't seem to be true, right? That calling Isser Schora a derivative of Isser Hana is problematic because, you know, these things don't have an Isser Hana.
No, but
and then you'll say, no, they have an attenuated Isser Hana'a called Schora. Yes, that would be the conceptual model.
Like, you can't say that it's it's like that they would have an isser of hana, just like if you ever get something that's tossed around, like that the tree right there could be used to kill someone, so therefore I can't sell you the tree, right? Because it's isser hana, right? Because like you're getting benefit from the tree by killing someone.
No.
It's the same thing as the cheese.
What? No. It's that something which is usser ba'achila can have an isser hana, right? No. It's not. There's an isser. The Gemara is now introducing an expansion on those things which have an isra achila, right? Okay. Right? Not things that are neutral, right, which can be used for isra. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about something that is asra achila. Right now, the Gemara is introducing isra schara, which the Gemara then seems to conceptualize as a derivative of hana. The problem is, for the purpose of shviat, in shviat, it's clear there's no such thing as isra hana. The second problem is that even in the context of these isra achila, they don't seem to be asra hana in any classic sense. To the extent that they have an isra hana, how does it express itself? As an isra schora. But as an isra hana, it doesn't seem to exist. Oh, yeah, thank you. Right? You're going to have to, right, exactly. Right, what you're going to end up with is, a redefined isra hana, by which we really meant an isra schora, which is conceptualized as an isra hana, but not an isra hana. Oh, yeah, exactly. Thank you. This is a big problem, right? This is a big problem, right? It's a big problem. Yes. So this is very problematic. Good. So then the Gemara says, by the way, this only applies by Dorai. So kol davar sheisuro divar Torah asur lasot bo schora, v'kol davar sheisuro mitivrayhen mutar lasot bo schora. Okay, fine. Varei chamor. What about a donkey? Right? So the Gemara says, a donkey you're allowed to sell. So then the Gemara says, l'malachto hu gadel. You're allowed to sell a donkey because you sell donkeys for work and not as food. Now,
what if the reason that it's only used for work is because it's not kosher? If it was kosher, its main use would be eaten.
No. You're getting fancy. There's a bigger problem here.
What?
So there should be a bigger problem. Why do you keep? Come on, be simple. Simple.
Donkeys A, donkey fries, A froze. B, the next one, Jews don't eat it, but non-Jews.
Okay, but come on, before you even go that far, someone.
Your intention changes the character.
Well, what's the problem with that?
Then I could use that for anything, right? If my intention for anything.
More simple. Right. You're right, but there's even bigger, simpler. Just reading Yerushalmi. What's the problem?
That you might sell it in a way that it'll be used for achila.
Come on, guys. Come on. Simple. Think simple. What did the previous line of the Yerushalmi say? What is the nature of the Isser Schora? Before that. Before I qualified it. What was the nature of the Isser Schora? It's an Isser Hana'a. Right? So why does the fact that you're... Yes. So why does the fact that you're selling it for business make it less of an isra hana? If I didn't have the first half of the Yerushalmi, right, and I just said to you, it is usher to sell pig because people generally eat it, but it's mutter to sell donkey because people use it for work, and then I said, conceptualize the isra schora for me. Explain to me why schora is usher. What would you have said?
I would have said that anything that you're selling with the intention of it being used for selling.
Because, and why is it usher? No, if you didn't know the first half of the Yerushalmi, if I erased the first half of the Yerushalmi, if I just told you, I told you in a vacuum, right? I want you to, right? I know you already read the Yerushalmi, so it's unfair, right?
But
meaning what? This is going back to David's point before, right? I would have said, what is the Isser? Some sort of lifnei there, right? Some sort of gzera, because you can't enable the violation of Isser, right? So, you understand that the first line of the Yerushalmi and the second, third line of the Yerushalmi on this sugya seem to contradict themselves. Because if Isser Schora is a derivative of an Isser Hana'a, then that means that just like I'm not allowed to eat donkey, I can't sell donkey. Right? Even if you have an attenuated conceptualization of Hana'a here, still, it has nothing to do with how I'm going to use it. The point is that just like there's an Isser Achila, there's an Isser Hana, which expresses itself here in an Isser of Schora, right? That's what you get from the first line of the Yerushalmi. Then you get a qualification on only Daraisa, not Darabanan, fine. Then the third line says, by the way, it's Mutter if...
It's Mutter
if you're going to sell it in such a way where no one was going to eat it anyways. Now, if I only had the third line and I asked you what is the nature of the issue, I would have gone with what David said before. It's not a problem of this. For David's sake, I will say this, and then I will say it in English. Right? Right? For David's sake, it's not an issue on the Chefza, it's an issue in what you are going to enable the Gavra to do. That was really disastrous. But, right? I'm going to try it. But now I'll try without jargon. But to put it differently, meaning. Right, to put it differently, I put it in a way that is clearer for me, at least, okay? Right? When you say that it is an Isra Hana'a, what you mean, as David would put it, is that just like there is an inherent Isra in this object, right? It's more expansive than just I can't eat it, I also can't benefit, which means that I can't sell it, right? It's inheres in the object. There's a reality. Once you start saying things like, the only thing that matters is how the person is going to use it.
That's really bad.
Right? Then what you're saying is not that there's an... Right, this has nothing to do with the Isra status of the object. It's not the what inheres in it, but rather it's its usage. And therefore, yes, as David said, right, once you're in this category, there shouldn't be a difference between selling chamor because it might be eaten and selling a
tree because it might stab someone.
Right? If I have reason to believe that someone will be stabbed with it, right? Yeah. Meaning if not, then no, right?
But it's just, it's too subjective. Like, you don't
know. It's not subjective. It's that the if I just had this third line in the Yerushalmi, I would have said that the Isra Schara is a geder, is a derivative of Lifnei Iver, right? But not a derivative of Hana'a. The problem is now the Yerushalmi has now, in the course of three clauses, three statements, right, contradicted itself. Because first it's conceptualized the Isra Schara as a derivative of Isra Hana'a, which therefore means that this object inherently cannot be benefited from, which means that it doesn't matter what I'm going to use it for, right? Because I have an Isra to eat it or benefit, which manifests itself as I can't do business with it, right? And then it turns around and says, but don't worry, you can sell a chamor as long as the normal thing that people do with it is work, which implies that the Isra Schara is not conceptualized as an Isra Hana'a. It's conceptualized as a Gzeira, as a Lifnei Iver, right? So A, the Yerushalmi is incomprehensible, right?
Yeah,
completely,
yeah.
Completely incomprehensible, right? B, remember that we are reading these lines in the Yerushalmi not just because they exist in the Yerushalmi, but because in some way, shape, or form, this is supposed to shed light on Shvi'it, right? Shvi'it. Which, of course, complicates the problem because I don't know what it means in the first place. I don't know what it's trying to tell me, right? Wonderful. So then the Gemara says, "Vare gamal lemalachlehu gadol." Great. Also, camel, same way. Rav Hoshia nasa v'yahev bahadein murius. Right. Then the Gemara transitions and says that Rav Hoshia used to do business with what's murius? Yeah. Right. Some sort of fish brine. Right. Right, which, yeah, exactly. Which might have, right, which is Asur Midir Abanon, because the simple understanding is Asur Midir Abanon because it might have not kosher stuff mixed into it, wine or whatever. Right? And Rav Chunin Nasavi Aiv Bahadin Chiltuta. Right? And he would sell Chiltuta. What's Chiltuta? What?
Very sharp spice called
asafoetida. Yes, asafoetida. It has a nickname. Do you know what asafoetida is?
Nope.
Okay. So.
Oh yeah, I looked it up right away.
It's also known as I believe devil's dung.
that's flattering.
Yes. So asafoetida. So basically, when the Gemara, how many of you guys know what Davar Harif is? The halacha of Davar Harif. Right. So what's the halacha? Okay.
Oh, you're saying like sharp cheese?
No, yes.
Sharp
cheese. God. Okay, guys. So, okay. A few minute aside here, okay? 90% of the time, and you probably, any of you who grew up in rabbinic homes probably know this, right? 90% of the time, when someone calls up a rabbi and says, "Rabbi, I have a kosher shaila, I'm sure your father got this. Ellie, I'm sure your father has gotten this," right? And says, "Rabbi, my spoon fell into blah, 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 blah. 90% of the time, your brain can shut off because the answer is almost always, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. You know why it's fine? Because first of all, right, most of the time, right, sometimes it's cold and then it's like, what are you asking me? Please stop, right? It's like, Rabbi, I accidentally used my fleshic spoon for my cereal. And rinse it off. Yalla, I mean, it's cold. I don't care, right? Sometimes, right, they'll say I mixed it hot. But then you'll ask, was it used in the last 24 hours? If it's not, it's no symptom of gum, right? And it's fine, right? Sometimes you'll have to caution the spoon, but it'll very rarely trafe up the pot, right? Even if it's going to, then you got to figure out shishim. How often is it shishim, right? It very rarely happens, right? Once in my entire life, right? I got a shayla, right? Someone called, or actually got it. What a friend of hers called, and I was like, this sounds too simple. And I said to Iwillig, I was near Iwillig, I said to him, he's like, wow, I've been posketing shaylas for like 50 years, right? And I've never actually gotten, because no one, you never get the simple case, right? Yeah. It was where it's actually trafe, right? But it was actually like, they had those little omelet pan, you know, the little, like it's only enough like one egg, so it's small, right? And they were using a big spatula, right? The flick flipper thing, right? To use it. And they used a fleshik one that they had just used for fleshik, right? Right, so it was Ben Yomo, and it was less than shishim. It actually trafed up the pot and the egg, and that never happens. It never happens. Okay, but that's most of the time. There's one thing that changes that. What changes it? Right, when that's most of the time. When do rabbis get shaylos? The answer is not.
When it's something that has a really strong case.
When someone calls and says, "I cut an onion," and then you're like, "Oh no, not an onion!" Right, not an onion. Right? Why? Because an onion possibly belongs to a category called davar harif. And Chazal have this very weird conceptualization of it that I don't want to... So the Gemara has this idea that something which is harif, which is sharp, right, can take dead taste, right, eino ben yomo taste, and can make it, can reinvigorate it and make it good magically. And therefore, onions mess everything up.
5 years ago, and then I use it with a...
So a spoon is not as bad, right? A spoon is not as bad. The worst is when you cut it, because then you have something called duchta de sakina, and it's the combination of the sharpness of the knife with the sharpness of the taste. No, it's different. Duchta really is pressure, fine? Okay? This is when things get really bad. That's when it... Right? And this is the category called davar harif. Now, one of the big machlokot is that lahalacha we treat onions as a davar harif. But the truth is that in the Gemara, it has very few things that are actually listed as davar harif. One of them is chiltit. The classic case is chiltit, is asafotida, right? Now, the problem is that trying to figure out whether onions should count, after you've actually researched asafotida, you just wonder how anyone could think that onions are harif. Because onions, I mean, sure, they have a sharp taste. Do you know what happens if you look on the Wikipedia page? I did this once, asafotida, right? Why is it called devil's dung? Because if you have it unprocessed, it will literally, not figuratively, literally burn a hole in your stomach, right? It is so strong, right? It must be processed properly. It is extremely strong. And it is very popular in Indian food, right? It is very... So there is one brand I found of kosher processed asafoetida, right? I don't know. I didn't buy it, but I saw it, found it online. I remember talking to Ray Weider about it, and I said, maybe we should buy it, you know, as a show and tell or whatever. And then I'm like, honestly, because with onions, sometimes you'll have folks who are like, well, you know, you could maybe suffix, say maybe onions aren't ever covered. They'll like edit as a sniff lahakel. I'm like, I don't want actual chiltit in my kitchen because that's halakhically dangerous. Right, this is when rabbis have their fun, and he's like, "What? Where's your sense of adventure?" Right? I mean, like, right? Like, no. So that's chilted, okay?
On the Wikipedia page, asafoetida is mentioned numerous times in Jewish literature, such as the Mishnah. My mommy just also writes in the Mishnah Torah.
Correct. There you go. Right. So chilted is
mustard is put in the same category.
Mustard used to be a lot stronger.
Yeah, so chiltit. So that's chiltit. Okay, so the Gemara says chiltit. Chiltit is really problematic, right? Right, so what's the problem here? Right, now in this case, right, the Gemara seems to be giving examples of things that you can do business with that are derabanan. Okay, that seems to be something like what's going on. Okay?
The sharpness of the case of the camel, it was like the reason is
mainly used is for work, but it has
correct.
The other use of being eaten.
It has a
secondary function. But by Shemitah, the main use is to eat it, which is allowed, and
yeah.
therefore has no relationship to this
yes.
at all.
So again, so now if we look back at it, so we could just say, listen, the Yerushalmi is, it could just be that this is proof. So it could be that after you read this, it could say, let's divide and conquer here. You could say that for the vantage point of Shemitah, what we have learned from reading this Yerushalmi is that the comparison of Shemitah, Schora by Shemitah, for all the other things is totally incidental. Because there is no way that conceptually they are linked if the Gemara derives the Isser Schora here of non-kosher food as a derivative of Isser Hana, it cannot possibly compare to Shemitah, because Shemitah is Mutter Bahana, in fact, it's a mitzvah Bahana, including things that are not Achila. Chayiv, mitzvah, whatever, right? By Tseva, by Hadlaka, by Sicha. So you could just say, listen, the conclusion here is that the nature of the Isser Schora is just not related to any of these, right? It's incidental. So let's try to analyze it without this. Right? Then you would, if you said that, you would only have to deal with the other problem, which is that the Yerushalmi itself seems to be incomprehensible. Minor problem. Right, I mean, okay, not incomprehensible. It's as I remember once in a shir by Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, he's like, it's ki'ilu. Sometimes you have to relate to it as ki'ilu the tzvei dinim, right? The chakira is the first line versus the third line, right? Like, you have to present it if there's a machloket between two lines in the Gemara. Right, exactly, because, like, it's at first glance, it's completely incomprehensible, right? It's like, first it derives it as a derivative, and then you just have to deal with the local case and then figure it out. But
we do have hanas that are usher, though, by Shemitah.
Oh, very good. Very good. So then Josh comes along and he says, maybe I could totally mess with your mind. And I could say the answer to the Stira and Yerushalmi is going to explain how it's linked to Shviat, right? How? Well, Josh says, well, wait a second. Before I know how to answer the problem of the Yerushalmi, I know that because the first line seems to contradict the third line, being a good Lamdan, what I need to do is, if I want to maintain the first any semblance of sense in the first line and still think that the third line doesn't contradict it, then I need to approach this with nuance and say that whatever we're going to say, it must be that the type of Isra Hana that you are presenting is much less extreme than it seems to present at the beginning, right? And that's why that type of Isra Hana is somehow influenced by the Gzera Atu ... right? That somehow those aren't completely distinct, right? And what we mean here by Isser Hana is something unique. And then Josh says, oh, well, however, I'm going to solve the internal problem of the Yerushalmi by Shkatzim, Ramasim, and the like. Once I start to say that the Gemara's blanket Isser Hana that manifests itself in Isser Schora can't possibly mean what it says. It must mean that there are certain types of Hana that are Usser, right? Which is then fleshed out later in the Yerushalmi.
Right.
Then you say, wait a second. So whatever the conclusion is going to be, you mean to tell me that there can be Isser Hanas that manifest themselves in very minimalist ways? Well, Shviat has certain things that you can't benefit from. So maybe you actually can come up with a language in which, even though Hana is Mutter by Shemitah, there is a formulation that is available to us in which the Isra Hana by Shemitah exists, but in an attenuated form, which expresses itself in Schora, just like we're going to have to say something like that if we want to make any sense of the Yerushalmi. That's exactly the problem here, right? Is that you could ignore the Yerushalmi and just say it must not be connected to Shemitah. But if you're actually going to try to solve the Yerushalmi internally in the context of non-kosher food, it needs to refer to some concept which is more minimalist. And the second is more minimalist, right? Then you can come back to Shemitah, because Shemitah does have certain things which are by now. You can't just do whatever you want with it, right? And that would solve our problem, which is Mordechai's problem before, which is, what is it doing here? Well, the answer is, if in fact, if in fact this is presenting some sort of nuanced type of hana, which is asur, even though fundamentally hana is mutar and it still conceptualizes an isur hana, that type of language can be helpful in Shemitah if we pin it down properly. And then you can explain the other problem stylistically, which is why it's here. Right? And that's why I said, right, remember I told you, I said, last week we're going to do the sugya of Sahara. And then we're going to read the Yerushalmi and you're going to torment yourself because you're going to have all the svaras in the background of what Isra Sahara might look like. And then you're going to read the Yerushalmi and say, what? How does this any, I understand in the Bavli, it's all nice and neat. In the Yerushalmi, do I want to make any sense of this? I told you this. I told you we're going to do a deep dive into Zion Aleph, and it wasn't going to be easy. I told you that. I warned you. I warned you.
I just had a fall with after we defined Hana and like Torah through the rest of that piece of Gemara that we just did. How does that work in a Mishnah? I don't understand.
Yes.
That's our fault.
Okay. But you guys voted that we want to highlight all the problems in the Yerushalmi first. Right. So let's continue. Let's get all the problems right in a line so that then we can spend however many days it takes to actually try to solve this monstrosity. Okay? Yay! Okay. So then the Gemara continues. Veloye lokeach yirakot sadeh v'chule. Right? So then the Gemara continues on the line of the Yerushalmi, on the line of the Mishnah, rather, that what?
You can't take
that you can't take it and take it from the field and sell it in the market, but you can pick it and your son can sell it. Right? So now the Yerushalmi says, Tani, lo yehu chamisha milaktin yarak ve'echad mocher. Aval mocher hu shelo v'shel chaviro. You can't have five people pick in one cell.
One of those five,
but you can sell.
Else.
What?
One of those five or six persons.
Sounds like one of the five.
Okay. That would make a difference,
but you can sell yours and your friends.
It seems to parallel the case that it brings up with the brothers. Which it is for sure one of them. So, but the fact that their brothers make them less official business partners somehow.
And then it says, Chamisha achim milaktin ve'echad mocha yedin. But five brothers can pick and one can sell.
Why can't siblings be business partners? I don't understand.
Good. So what is...
The same was al yedin, but the first one wasn't al yedin.
Good. So what does this mean? Oh, very good. So Josh picks up on a very nuanced diok here, which is al yadon, right? Al yadayan. So what does that seem to mean? What does it seem to mean when echad mocher, right? What is the simplest read of this Yerushalmi? What's usher, what's mutter?
It's usher to have a prearranged partnership.
Right, good. Right, so Mordechai says that it sounds like the first half is a partnership, and a partnership is worse. And Josh, why does that play out in your linguistic point? Right, I'm not selling for them, I'm selling for us, right? Meaning a partnership is different, right? Because it sounds like a partnership, what's the problem with a partnership? Is that I'm not selling on behalf of other people, what am I doing? I'm selling for us, right?
You're selling for us or you're selling for me and I'm selling for my friends.
Exactly. Right? And it seems to be that what the Yerushalmi is telling us is that you are allowed to sell for others, right? But you're not allowed to sell for us. Chiddush is that you are expansive.
Well,
right?
The problem is that specifically in the first case, that this one is also...
You're not allowed to sell your own stuff.
So maybe it has to be...
But the lashon is hu shelo v'shel chaver. It makes a separation. But the second case is...
Now, obviously, the problem is, right, now, obviously, you're going to have to figure out how you're allowed to sell yours, right? Good. So what are you going to have to do, right? What's the problem? The problem is, you could have said, I'm allowed to sell Kobe's, right? But I shouldn't be allowed to sell mine in Kobe's, right? So then you got to figure out,
Is it making it...
questionable of whose it is.
So you could have said Lavdavka, right? You could have said maybe it's a case where I'm allowed to sell mine beheter, right? It's just, right? Like, you could punt and say... Ah, or you're going to say, oh, Havla, this is Havla. Havla is mutter.
Oh, no.
Right? Very good. Right? So you could have said, Lavdavka. You could have said that it means in a case where I picked for myself for food and I have left over. So then I'm allowed to sell mine and I can sell Kobe's even if it's business. Like I happen to be going to the marketplace and I'm allowed to sell because we know that there are cases where I'm allowed to sell my own. Or you say, no, this is really a case where it should be usher for me to sell mine. And the fact that I'm selling Kobe's makes it better. And that's what we call Havla.
I'm selling mine, and then while I'm selling mine, my friend wants me to sell his, so it's like a lesser.
Right, but the problem is that the opposite is true, that me selling mine is more problematic.
Yeah. I'm saying, but that's what the action is. This is what the promotion is.
I haven't gotten to the first team yet. I haven't gone anywhere.
Wait, so Rebbe, is the option generally more likely not to have a free deal beforehand?
Oh, and then, wait. So then we have a problem. We say, okay, let's even assume that's what it means. Then we have the case of brothers, and then you say, aha. Uh-huh. So why are brothers better than a partnership?
Because they don't make a deal beforehand.
Ah, because they don't make a deal? What? So, ah, so now, is it magic? It's because they didn't make a deal? Is it because it's based on trust? What if the family in question... Bonagid that the family in question are the Waltons. So now what are you going to tell me? Is it a problem? Not a problem. The Waltons, you know the Waltons? The family who owns Walmart?
Okay.
Oh my God.
Right? So what would you say? What would you say? Wait, you're going to tell me, aha, wait, they are all together on the board of Walmart. Now it's us, it's a partnership. Right? Because you're saying maybe it's normally family is okay because it's not a partnership. It's just like, oh, I'm helping out. But if it was formalized, it'd be problematic. Why? Or is it like, no, something about the family situation makes it better magically? I don't know.
Why is the first case not a flaw?
What do you mean it's not a flaw? Well, presumably because you're selling, it's defined as I'm selling hours.
No, the thing is, a family is an intrinsic unit. But the first case with the five people and one selling for them is on an intrinsic unit.
So that's why I'm asking you. So what if you had five brothers who are in a business partnership? Is it?
It's a problem.
I would have said simply it's a problem. I would say probably it's a problem. Yeah. I would assume that if I don't want to get too fancy, very good. I would assume you're right. I would assume that we shouldn't get too fancy and say that brothers are not as problematic because they're not formed into a corporation, into a unit, into a partnership. But if they were... Right, so you could... See, that's the problem, is you could always do something like that, which is to say, no, it's a family business, it's different chalois, because... See, that's the problem, is you could always do that. You could say, what do you mean? When it's a family business, it doesn't feel as corporate, it doesn't have as impersonal, right? That's why family businesses are da da da, yeah. What? Wait, I can't hear Kobe. What?
Did you call your business partner or did you call your brother?
It depends. Do you like your brother or do you hate your brother? But yeah, okay, go ahead.
No.
I can't hear Kobe.
Shut up.
I know. You're telling me, well, it depends. Is it the type of brother that you have over Shabbos dinner? Then you're treating it as family. If it's the type of brother that I only see at work, he's my business partner who happens to share blood. Oh, okay, yeah.
What?
They aren't going to necessarily be treating each other as people. Like, even in a, like, maybe, let's say I pick the best things for myself and not for my brother. So I think you say that the family has anything special about it. It's either everyone is, like, equal in their eyes, or they're always going to be separated from each other.
Right, so we got to figure that out, right? Then, by the way, we still need to figure out, right, what's the problem here, right? All of this, we're getting into the details, but we still need to figure the fundamental principle, which is, why is it less problematic to sell for others than it is for yourself?
That would be the case of brothers, what it is.
Right. Meaning all of this seems to be predicated on the notion that it's less problematic to sell for others. Right now, if I pause for a second, I know I said I was going to read the Yerushalmi, but who jumps in on this, on the Diokir? No, not Josephus. Right? We already... So remember Tosvos. Tosvos, it said what?
That it's... If it's the same person.
Well,
the same person is
right. So, right. So, Josh says Tosvos, right? Tosvos is understanding conceptualization of this sugya derives from this line, which is, it is right. It is usher only. It's only usher to sell if you are the person who.
Because you're not allowed to pick with intention.
Right, you can't pick for selling, and that's what we saw. Wow. And Tosvos is based on the Rav, right? But if their business partner, exactly, right? Meaning Mordechai says, Mordechai will say, Tosvos is a very good, right? Mordechai will say, Tosvos is a very good understanding of the sugya, which is, if you think that the Isser Schora is a derivative of the Isser, one second, of the Isser Kitsira, right? Like a Ruchon Vishra Perla, like the way the Rav understood Tosvos. So then the only, one second, you said something good, let me spell it out. That the only thing that's Isser is picking in condition to sell. So if I pick and then Kobe happens to sell it, it's fine. But if I'm in a partnership with Josh and David and Mordechai and Shlomo, right? What? But not Kobe, right? So we're in partnership. So then, because it's an us, right? Because it's an us, just because I'm not the one picking doesn't mean that I'm not picking, yeah. Right? Meaning, you can only say that I picked and it doesn't relate to the selling if I happen to pick and then Kobe sells on my behalf, right? But if we're in a partnership, that's how partnerships work. You have the people who are in charge of the harvesting. You have people in charge of marketing and people in charge of advertising and right and actual selling, right? You have the sales rep and whatever, right? I mean, I don't know who's Josh told me he has a garden, so Josh is good at the harvesting, right? And David is an excellent salesman, right? Excellent salesman, and yes, I will be the economist. I will sit there and do the modeling of whatever, right? And you know, whatever, right? Mordechai, you can be the taste tester. I don't know. I don't know.
Wait, what do you do with the middle case though, according to this case?
Yes, Mordechai.
Doesn't make sense because when you pick, you were picking with intention of selling. Whether or not it's an official partnership or not, the shinoi only works in with Rashi's interpretation.
So Mordechai says, "What do you mean? Why do you have to go Tosvos? Remember, we could go with Rashi." One second. So Mordechai says, "No, no. First of all, he says this could just as easily be Rashi. Namely, what? Right? Just as easily be Rashi that Isser Schora doesn't really exist. Isser Schora is just." A gzera atu, you might misuse the payroll, might not do beer, whatever. And therefore, the whole sugya is about a shinoi. And then he says, it's very simple. If I sell for someone else, that's a shinoi. If I sell for my partner, it's not a shinoi, and therefore it's for usher. So now Mordechai says, okay, so Rashi makes sense here. Now Mordechai, you want to say more than that. You want to say, not only does Rashi make sense, but Tosvos doesn't make sense. Why does Tosvos not make sense?
No, not just that, because Tosvos doesn't make sense, because you're not making a separation for anything in terms of that. The Isser was for you, the Isser going to Tosvos is to pick with intention to sell later on. You are picking with intention to sell later on.
That? He said same person.
Who says that brothers have to be picking to sell with intentions? Picking to with intention to sell.
Okay, so formulate it better because I'm not sure what you're saying. Now, by the way, who else jumps in on this? Right? And this is the sheet that we had not yet seen. But who else jumps on this? No. Right? This is the one sheet I sent you that we hadn't yet seen, which was the Gra. Right? The Gra comes along, and the Gra says, you're misreading it. You have the wrong deal. What's the deal, Kier? Right? The Gra says, you missed the whole point. What's the deal, Kier? The deal is not you versus others. What's the real deal? Lokeach versus locate.
Oh, right.
Oh.
Right? Remember, the Gra says... Right, the Gross is the exact opposite of Tosvos. Right, what is the... He says the opposite of Tosvos. What does the Gross say? What does the Gross say? I sent it to you, right? The Gross, what does he say? He says the opposite of everyone else. What does he say? He says that if you pick to sell, it is... mutter. What's the only thing you're not allowed to do?
Buy
to sell. Right? And therefore, he's medayek. That, how do you read it? Lo yeh lo keach. Don't buy to sell, But malakit has nothing to do with you with other people. What's the real rule? Right? Don't buy, but you can harvest
what's
to
the,
sell.
Why is the first use of the bryce a problem, according to him?
Well, first, give me a svara for the gra. Right? What's the logic of the gra? Right? Why would the gra say anything like that?
Because that's treating it. That's not treating it like.
Very good. Right? The gra seems to be the extreme of thinking that why is svara aser? Because you're not treating it as hefker. What's the most, right? What's the worst way of treating it as non-hefker? By making a business, buying and selling, right? Acting as a whole. If you pick it and then sell it. Okay, so you're selling it, someone's going to eat it, that's fine. But if you start with the whole, right,
buying,
selling, wholesaling, retailing, right, raising the price for shipping, it, right, that already is schora, because schora is an intrinsic problem.
Walmart and sell, stuff.
Right, meaning it's basically you can have a farmer's market, but you can't have a supermarket. Right? You can, right, according to the growth, you can have a farmer's market.
Why is that a problem?
So what's the problem? And so how's the Gra going to read the first case? So either you could change it to Lokeach, sure, if you wanted to change the Girsa, or maybe he'll say, no, when there's a business partnership, that's a problem, right? The fact that there's a business partnership creates more problems because the whole context is business-like, right? Or something like that, right? Yeah.
Why not?
No. I understand what he says. I just don't understand how he says it. Because, how can you possibly say that if your son sells it for you, that you didn't intend for it to be sold?
You gave it over to him. And then you sold it.
But you picked it
with intent to give it over to him.
Yeah.
Rabbi, according
to... Son just sold it on you just picked it, and you gave it to your son. Your son is
Rabbi, can you say the last case of the brothers was that the five brothers all went out to get food for dinner, and then they have a ton of extra. So you're selling all the extras that they have. So it's just a case of
sure,
the extra.
Sure, maybe.
It seems
I don't
like the shinoid affects the status of the seller. That's the main thing, right?
Okay.
The second case
On your behalf.
Right, so again, the Shinoi.
Okay, so you know what? Let's see. We only have a few more minutes, so we're not going to get to the next piece of Gemara. So let's just take 1 minute. Guys, do you have I at least have a Shinoi Gersa out here who explains how the Gra is going to work out this Gemara. Do you? Right? Is that the Gra seems to say that it's not a problem to pick and sell. It's only a problem to sell, to buy and sell. Except the case of the five partners is Hamisha Milaktin. There's five picking, right? Right? So what does he say?
He doesn't actually say it. He just tells you where to look.
Right, so here I have, so what will he say? Right, so what does he just say? According to this, what are you going to have to do?
Someone else, as like a, you're giving it to them, means that you're no longer picking it with intention to sell. You're picking it with intention to give it to someone else.
Right, but he point. Wait, oh yeah, you're right. My footnote also just says that the problem. This is a problem for the grub.
Yeah.
Right. Right. They offer suggestions. Right, from the Ziv Hayam and the Chazon Ish, but it's a problem. Right. Okay. So we're gonna have to try to solve it for the grub. Okay. We're already out of time. So guys. Okay. One second. Fine, guys. So guys, we're running out. We're basically out of time. So let me just say. So here's what we could do. The next line. Okay, the next mini sugya here says that the problem is only, right, umanato bekaf, right, that when your profession is, right, when your profession is to do this, right? So the problem is what? So no one really knows, right? It's the problem, we have this sugya in parallel in the Gemara and in the Bavli and Sanhedrin. And remember I told you at the beginning, it's not clear whether umanato bekach is really about whether it's usher versus mutter or in the context of an engine, whether it's about whether your puzzle ate it or not.
Yeah.
So this is a big problem here in the Yerushalmi, because the Gemara is about to say that this is only when umanatobikach. So is this just a borrowed sugya from Sanhedrin, right? Or is it actually saying that you don't violate the Isser Shviat unless it's your only job, right? In which case, in which case it will force us to reanalyze the entire, right? The entire case, right? Okay. So tomorrow, okay, maybe we will try to read quickly through the Yerushalmi to the end, because then we will at least have the last big questions. Then we're going to have to come back and try to plug in all these things. And Toch Kedei, right, we're going to have to try to understand the nature of the Isser Schora, the nature of the Isser Schora by non-kosher animals. Is it really related to the Isser Schora, right? The problem is that once you get into the Yerushalmi, I told you, reading Zayin Aleph is like, right, the Yerushalmi doesn't have that many lines. How many lines do the Yerushalmi actually have explicitly connected to the Isser Schora Shviat?
Like
three,
yeah,
right? Most of the conceptual work is done in trying to figure out what is the nature of the Isser Schora of all the other things that get thrown into this Mishnah, and why, if at all, are they connected to Schora of Shviat, right? That's the real problem here, is that it's the reason that it's hard to figure anything out in the Yerushalmi is the Yerushalmi just doesn't deal with the Isser directly, right? It has one case, which it does, right? But the primary sugya in the Yerushalmi is really about a million different other things, and you have to derive by comparison and contrast with the other sugyot that are present. Right. Right, that's the problem. The major sukkah here in the Yerushalmi is really about other things, and you have to derive the nature of the Shviat by comparison. Okay, so we will read through the rest of the Yerushalmi, and then we're going to go back and plug in, which is see what did the Mefarshim do to solve this. So again, we're going to have to plug in. See, focus mostly on the Mefarshim that you have here. Right, if you want to go look up that Chazon Ish and that Ziv HaYam to fit the Gra into the sugya, great. If not, also fine. Right. But our goal is to finish the Yerushalmi and then probably take a few days and try to answer the questions and plug them in and see how it sheds light on the Isser Schora, okay?